Houston, standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe continues now
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe, last real good guy on the Huntington Bank Madeline. Brian the Brain. 713-780-ESPN. So Nick Caserio had a lot to say today.
Good questions and don't ask dumb questions.
Did you see this little bait and switch that the Texas PR did, though? They had Nick Caserio original to talk today, like the normal time, at 9. But then they sent out a later release saying, oh, by the way, we're going to open up the team shop at 8 a.m. If you're in the area, swing on by to cover it.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny. I mean, whatever. They're probably going to be there anyways. And I also...
See the line?
See, I thought they were overplaying their hand. Because, like, they sent out the whole, like, oh, take off work that you normally see for, like, playoff games.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're, no, we play a playoff game at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. Right? Here's a note. Take it to your boss and get the day off work. Or if the Texans play, like, a Thursday game, like, hey, we play primetime tonight. Get out here and tailgate. Here's a note. They did that for a silly little rivalry merchandise release. So I thought they were overplaying their hand. And then I saw the line. I was like, okay, never mind. I was wrong.
The line at 6:45
in the
morning.
That was nuts. With a tropical storm coming.
Yeah.
People weren't gearing up for water and toilet paper. They weren't gassing up their generator. They were buying the new rivalry merch for the Houston Texans.
Crazy.
I applaud that. Well done, Texans.
Yeah, it's...
Well done.
And I want some of the merch. Disappointing jersey selection, it looks like.
I'm not a big merch purchaser.
If you're a jersey guy, I only saw 4 jerseys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was Stingley, Anderson, CJ, and Aziz.
Huh. I saw Nico.
Oh, yeah. Nico had to be in there.
I'm sure they'll come out with more. I mean, this is only the first wave.
Well, at least in the store. That's what I saw.
I just shot
online.
Only
the first wave.
All that stuff was online.
Yeah, online.
Did you buy anything?
I bought a hat.
You did? What does it look like?
It's a white hat with the... You know, the logo that we saw a few weeks ago.
Okay.
You don't look like a white hat kind of guy.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
No, he really doesn't.
What does a white hat guy look like?
Well, you know, you wear the white hat. It's like, it's kind of like symbolism.
Maybe it's because you're always
so I'm a bad person. Though.
Maybe it's because you're always wearing black t-shirts. So yeah. It's just like.
Yeah, you're not really that.
That was mostly before I started losing weight reasons.
Fair.
Yeah.
So now that you lost weight, you're going to wear a white hat? A white
To Joe's point, if they had offered a blue version, I would have bought the blue.
I'm not a big merchandise
buyer. All the hats were white.
I'm really not. I can't remember the last time I bought any merch ever.
Really?
Yeah.
You're wearing a baby blue Houston Cougs hat.
Didn't buy it.
That's a fair point.
I was given this.
Yeah, these shirts are sweet, though.
I'm not a big merchandise purchaser. And I'll get them for like gifts and stuff. But me, myself, going out and spending money on, like, team merchandise, I don't really do that.
Okay.
Not that there's – I'm not trying to, like – I'm not demeaning it. I'm not putting it down.
I mean, it's also
– You do you. I'm not getting in the – fan how you want
to fan. I usually only do when it's something unique.
Maybe if there's, like, a discount, you know?
Yeah, because these are –
frugal
– These are expensive.
Not in that category.
Yeah, I'm not – I have zero interest in paying – when would you pay for the hat? $50?
Well, no, the one I – they had different hats that were different prices. The one I bought, I think, was $43.
Is that how it works, that different things cost different amounts of money?
How much do you think
you said 53?
43.
Oh, 43.
But there were hats that cost 48. There was a shirt I considered buying. It was $60, just a regular t-shirt.
You can't do that.
What do you think the hoodie costs?
The hoodie? Probably $99. 120?
120.
That's too much, man.
Yeah.
Like, if it was $30, I'm in.
Hand and cow got
a few kids, man. If it was $30, I'm in.
I mean, it is expensive.
I'll wait until it goes on hits the discount racks at Academy. You can get some nice fitting shirts for $9.99.
You can get
Why'd
a
you
lot
drop
of shirts.
A southern accent there?
I don't know. It felt right.
He'll get you a nice Graham Mertz t-shirt.
Yeah.
You
guys got CJ Stroud jerseys and Nico Collins jerseys. I'm going to show up with a Case Keenum jersey.
Hey, you would do that anyway, though.
I do have a Case Keenum jersey, although I didn't buy that one either. So that was my uncle gave that to me, my Uncle Pete. He knew how much it meant to me.
Because he loves you.
So he gave it to me. And he knows that he loves me as much as I love Case. Mm. So he gave it to me. But that was pretty cool that the fan showed up, even though it's probably more wise to just
wait,
purchase it on the internet.
Yes.
But that was cool how they showed up. Nick Caserio was asked about the C.J. Stroud, latest on the C.J. Stroud extension, and here was Nick Caserio's response to such question.
As it pertains to CJ, yeah, I mean, kind of similar to what I said during training camp. You know, we've had productive discussions, I would say, and the reality is we'll either get it figured out before the season starts, and if we don't get it figured out before the season starts, then it'll be something we address in the offseason. So, you know, whenever it happens, it happens.
There you go. If it happens, it happens.
Whenever it happens, it happens.
Whenever it happens, it happens. Now, I did see Brian tweeting about the Brian had some takes
Brian?
About the soundbite. Massive take. Big,
I don't think it was
takes.
That hot.
I disagree with him.
You did, well,
I do disagree with him.
Because so 5 weeks ago, we heard this exact same line. And credit to Cassara, he even references the fact that he said the exact same thing 5 weeks ago. I just think if we're going to take him at his word that, especially at the meaning of the word, that the talks were productive, you're not going 5 weeks of, quote, productive talks and not getting a deal done.
Like, I disagree with you.
Like, I don't buy at all that they're going to have a deal before the season starts. I think if they were...
That's not
if,
what he said.
Well, I also take the thing what he said at the end where he goes, well, if it happens, it happens. Like, if you were close to...
He's right.
Sure. But if you were close to having a deal, the tone wouldn't be, ugh, if it happens, it happens.
That's his tone with everything. That's his tone about trading up for number three. Oh, I mean, we got Will Anderson. We got the football player. Hopefully the football player is good. Huh? Like, that's how his tone is with everything. He doesn't get overly excited.
I
he doesn't get overly disappointed. It's, yeah. You know, football,
I think it'd be
football.
More like we're really working hard to get a deal done.
I don't think he's ever said that. I don't think he's ever said that. Even whenever he's asked about, like, he was asked about extensions for other players in that press conference as well. And he's like, yeah, you know, if we like the guy, we'll try to offer the guy. If the guy doesn't want to be here, they'll leave free agent. He wasn't asked specifically about a player.
Okay.
He was asked about, like, Sarge asked him the question. I'm pretty sure he was referring to Kayshon Booty, but he didn't ask a specific name. He said, like, whenever you acquire players and they're in the final year of their deal and you want to bring them back, what's that process like? And Kassir's like, well, if we like the player, you know, we'll have a conversation and we'll see if we want the player back. But the player's got to want to be back. You know, so he's what's the word I'm looking for? He's even keeled. He's mild-mannered.
Deadpan.
Yeah.
He's a robot.
He's a robot. Like, that's his reaction to everything. So I think you're reading way too much into it. Also, like, this is a pretty big contract. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the numbers that we've thrown around? I believe, and I tweeted this today, that the anchor points of these negotiations at the very beginning, Texans roughly, in my opinion, let me say that.
Did you say that in your tweet?
No, I did not, intentionally.
get the breaking news
program
already?
Directors tell radio hosts not to say think, and in my opinion, because you sound weak. You sound like a coward with your strong takes. But I'm making it an exception. For this very moment, so I don't get in trouble again. 4.5 million views. I believe that the anchor points at the beginning of these conversations were Texans were roughly around 55 million. I believe that David Mulligetta and CJ Stroud were roughly around 70 million. Ready to go? Breaking news?
No, I was tweeting that as breaking news.
So, like, I see what you did there. So, and like, maybe you go 2-3 million in each direction. Texans around 55, CJ around 70, which, by the way, I haven't told anybody this. After all that stuff went viral, I had somebody in my DM saying that Stroud does want $65 to $70 million. Mm. Just saying. For somebody who has broken news before, by
boom,
the way.
There we go. Jeremy Brandon's
right.
I'm
not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I've heard this from a DM. Not tweeting that. I'm not outing the person either. Because true journalists protect their sources.
They do.
But you're not a journalist, so out them.
Yeah, I'm not. But I'm not going to out them because that would be Bush League. So I believe the anchor points were around 55, 70 million. Texans, 55. Stroud, 70. Could you go $2, $3 million each way based on their anchor points? Yes, absolutely you can. That's a long way to go. That's a long way to go. So whenever he says productive negotiations and productive discussions, maybe they've cut that gap from 15 million to 5 million. So you're kind of putting down like the productive conversation, and like they're still at the same exact point. One, there's no way of knowing that, and I do believe in negotiations that are $15 million apart. That over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, productive negotiations could trim it down to about a $5 million difference. Like we've negotiated houses, we've like cars, you know, not as big a purchase as a house, but that's not something that's done overnight. Like you're nickel and diming anything you can.
Sure, but like I also don't believe this process started 5 weeks ago at the start of training camp. Like they've extended Nico, they've extended Xyz, they've extended Will long before training camp got here. I would have to believe conversations with Mulligetta began as early as March, maybe even February. So it's not like this 5 week period. I can't buy if the talks were productive if after this entire offseason they still don't have a deal.
Two counterpoints. I think that's a good point, by the way. I think that's well said and well argued. The two points that I would push back on you on, though, are none of those guys' contracts are going to be as big as this one. even, I mean, Will Anderson's a better football player relative to his position than C.J. Stroud is relative to his. But C.J. Stroud's contract's going to be bigger than Will Anderson's and all of those other guys. Secondly, they don't like Stroud as much as those other guys.
I think so. Well, I know, but that, I think that's the answer why they're not going to get the deal done, is they don't like him.
I'm not pushing back that they're not going to get the deal done.
Okay.
I'm pushing back at the productive talks. I do think they've had productive talks. I think you're kind of putting down the point of productive talks.
Yeah,
like you don't think that the gap has been closed at all. And there's actually a report counter to your opinion.
Okay.
Jonathan Alexander's report today says that the two sides are within, like, yeah, I don't want to use the word striking distance. He said they're close. Let me find the exact language.
See, because I've been wondering, as they've been negotiating this, is it coming more to CJ's side? Or I guess you go either way. If it's more CJ, maybe there's less guarantee in some of this contract of like, hey, we'll get you closer to your number, but there's a lot less guaranteed.
Sure.
Or if you come closer to us, we can almost maybe not fully guarantee this
like
contract.
Like a Kirk Cousins in Minnesota.
Yeah, but like get like a 90% of it is guaranteed if you get closer to 55. If you get closer to 70.
That's what's going to be the sliding scale of somewhere between $60 and $65 million.
Yeah. How much of it is guaranteed the next 5 years?
No doubt.
And that is a...
It might
that
be
can take
three or four.
Yeah, like that to me could take a long time to negotiate that down, because you're talking about two big price points and then a lot of details within it about what's guaranteed and all that stuff. Also, like, would it shock you if Dale Mulugeta is asking for a no trade clause like he asked for Deshaun Watson?
No, and that's going to change the math too. Okay, yeah. We'll give you a no trade clause, but now $5 million has to be not guaranteed. You know, like that's why it's super complicated. To where I do think that there have been, or at least possibilities of productive talks over the last 3 weeks. Like, this stuff is difficult.
It is difficult. I mean, the no trade clause, I don't think would be a breaking point if I'm the Texans. Like, how often
it wouldn't change your guarantee amount?
Well, how often are you trading a quarterback making that much money? Like, okay, you have a no trade clause, but you're not trading a quarterback making that much money anyway.
Normally, I mean, quarterbacks have been traded with that much money.
Yeah.
It has happened.
Who?
I mean, well, this would be an unprecedented amount of money, but if we just say large quarterback contracts that have been traded, I mean, two quarterbacks were traded for each other that were on large contracts.
Stafford and Goff.
Yeah, I mean, Lamar Jackson was rumored to have been on the trade block, might be traded next offseason. We'll see.
But at least with the Stafford-Goff, it's a swap. It's not just one contract going out.
We've talked about that scenario with the Texans.
Yeah, no, I just can't think of one quarterback going out as the trade.
I mean, I'm sure there's been quarterbacks that have been traded for draft picks.
Sam
Bradford back in the day was traded for a first.
I guess I'd have to see what he was making.
That was a long time ago. But that was a big contract. But Sam Bradford's rookie contract was massive.
Yeah, he was the last of the
Mohicans. The
non-sliding scale guys, yeah.
I lost my train of thought. I forgot what I was going to say.
I mean, Rodgers.
Rodgers got traded.
He was traded. Matt Ryan wasn't that expensive at the time.
Tua just got traded, right? Wasn't Tua traded?
No,
or was he a free agent? I couldn't remember.
Yeah, biggest names here of quarterbacks that have been traded. Probably Rodgers and then Watson. And then whatever, Matt Ryan's contract. Sam Bradford was traded for a first-round pick.
Yeah, it was like late in camp, too. Wow. I want to say it was like late in preseason. Somebody got hurt and they traded for him.
Was that you said the Kansas City?
No, I think the Vikings traded for him. No, or did the Vikings trade him?
Vikings. The Eagles.
He was on the Eagles?
Vikings, yeah. That's what this says.
Hold on. Who traded for him?
Vikings acquire Sam Bradford from Eagles.
That's weird. I don't remember him with the Eagles.
Well, that must have been after he got cut from the Rams. Did he get cut from the Rams, go sign as a backup with the Eagles, and then get traded to the Vikings?
Man, I don't remember.
When he wouldn't have been making as much money?
Oh, I remember my point. If they were demanding a no-trade clause, I would want less millions guaranteed. Like, if we're assuming that C.J. Stroud were to sign, let's just call it 60 for math. Let's just say he does 60 for 4 years. That's $240 million. Let's say the Texans are willing to guarantee him $220 million, and then they hit him with a no-trade clause. I'd be like, okay, all right, we're willing to do that, but now you only get $200 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be asking – like, those are the allowances that I'm asking for. You know, like that's just negotiation. That's what's so difficult about this.
Yeah,
and Mulugeta is not an easy guy to negotiate with.
Yeah, just
and their numbers might be unrealistic.
I guess I'm most nitpicking sometimes Caserio's tendency to be loosey with the definitions of words. Like I know you and I disagree on if they're having productive talks, but I have to believe these go back to February, March, and if they were being productive, they wouldn't be still without a deal, unless one side is being incredibly unreasonable.
I mean, I think both sides, like, I see, I think you can have productive conversations, and both sides can view the other one as being unreasonable.
Are like, they productive like, then if you're not coming to any sort of middle ground? Like, that's kind of where I'm
that's fair.
I'm
but if they're moving here. In the direction of the middle, I think it is productive. If the gap is fit, let's, I mean, it's so arbitrary, too. Like, we're talking about average annual salary whenever it's so many other things. Like, looking at just the average annual is almost looking at this contract negotiation two-dimensionally when it's probably four dimensions at least, because you're talking about not only the average annual salary, but now you're talking about the total salary. You're talking about the total guarantee if there's a no-trade clause, all of it.
Incentives.
So there's so much that you would have to negotiate in this deal. Whenever we look at, 55 to 70, that's very, like, very rudimentary. Mm-hmm. That's almost like caveman approach to look at this, and I know I've been guilty of that. But the Jonathan Alexander article today, which Jonathan Alexander is a wonderful reporter. He does really good work. He was all over the Kayshon Booty trade. Whenever he reports something, I believe it. Why are you smiling?
What else has he had a back and forth on?
Oh, with me on Twitter?
Yeah, I was just making.
I don't hold grudges. I don't hold grudges. Like, somebody's a really good reporter, even though that we've had a tiff on Twitter. I forget about that night. John, that's not gonna change my opinion of him as a reporter.
You haven't held a grudge against Rome?
No. I call Chandler Rome a wonderful reporter.
He says bad takes.
I say he has terrible takes, and I poke fun of whenever he talks about the untenable infield and now says it's tenable. But I don't mistrust his reporting. I think he's a good reporter.
Oh, I wasn't saying that you did.
No, I have nothing wrong.
It feels
at
times like there's a little bit of a grudge there.
I poke fun.
When he called you, was it a clown that he put
Rome
on you?
Called me a clown, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't offend me.
Okay.
At all. It's not going to change my opinion of somebody because they called me a clown. It'd be kind of like, oh, cool, I've made it in the world. But he says, Jonathan Alexander, in his article today, league sources who are granted anonymity to speak freely said the Texans and Stroud's camp are not far off on what they think Stroud's contract term should look like and how much he should be paid per year.
League sources. So that's not within the team or Mulligetta?
I think Mulligetta would classify as a league source.
See,
you don't think that he's an NFL guy?
I'll be honest, I think you could even count the Texans as just a league source.
Absolutely. League source is a very wide umbrella.
I know, but I think if it was
reaching.
I think it was the Texans, they would say team source. Why would they say league source?
Because I think it's from the agent.
Okay. Okay.
I agree with you. If it was coming from the Texans,
saying league source
I believe
is protecting Mulligetta.
I believe so.
Because it's not going to say agent source.
Or just the agency. It might not even be Mulligetta specifically. Yeah. It might just be the agency of David Mulligetta.
Right.
I mean, that's interesting.
But I believe it's from the agent's point of view.
That reasoning makes sense.
I mean, that reporting there from Jonathan Alexander does make it feel like there's a chance that this thing does get done before September 13th.
It does.
If the report is true, there should be no reason why they don't get something done before September 13th. They've got 12 more days. And they've had 9 months.
Yeah.
But the headline also reads why Texans and CJ Stroud could wait until next year on contract extension.
See, I think it's all smoke and mirrors to protect CJ from having to get questions and people questioning his credibility as a franchise quarterback. I thought that's what this was from the beginning.
I don't know.
Hey, we're having great talks. Don't ask him about it because we love the guy.
Yeah, but the thing, like,
we're super high on him. We're having great talks.
They're still going to ask him questions. Well, maybe not.
They're trying to nuke it though.
Yeah, they should still ask questions. Like when he's playing well, you know, when he's not playing well, they probably won't, to be honest with you. But because it does kind of shut everything down the way Nick Cassera said is of just basically if we don't have a contract by week one, contract negotiations are over.
Hold on, what did you say?
That people should be asking questions still about.
No, what'd you say about that last part? Where Cassera,
he basically shut it down. It felt
not really.
You don't think so?
No, he walked that back.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, Mike Florio tweeted that. He's like, oh, because Nick Cassera did say if we don't get something done, then like we'll look at it in the off season. And then he was asked about it later, like to clarify exactly what he meant. I'm pulling up the transcripts so I can read it verbatim. He said on whether contract negotiations will wait until after the season with Stroud, if not reached before the regular season begins. Caceres said every situation is going to be different. We've done some deals during the season. I would say once players get into the season, sometimes they want to focus on football and don't want to worry about dealing with the contract. Maybe it's not as clean as some others. We've done it both ways. We've done deals before training camp. We've done deals during training camp, during the season. We'll see how it goes. It's just my sense. I could be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. We'll kind of see how it goes, kind of keep working through it. The way that I read that was that David Mulligetta put down a deadline.
Yeah.
That's the way that I read it.
Well, I'll tell you, like, I mean, from a Texans perspective, too, like, I wouldn't want to be negotiating in season because
– I disagree. Totally disagree.
Okay, because these conversations – so C.J. Stroud comes out the first four games – is on fire.
Uh-huh.
He's one that looks like a top five quarterback in the NFL.
Yes.
That gives Mulligetta the power.
So what? You don't have to sign a deal.
No, you don't.
If you eliminate times where you can negotiate with somebody, maybe you can get them in a weak moment. Like, why would you shut down negotiations ever?
Yeah, because the opposite could be true. He could suck for the first four games. You might be able to get a bargain.
Or he's like, looks pretty good, and David Mulligetta's like nervous about something and all of a sudden wants to sign a contract that you offered in the offseason.
Yeah.
You should never back away from the table. Ever. Ever back away from the table.
I'm fine with not negotiating in season. Like, I just
I completely disagree. I completely disagree.
There's plenty of time to get it done.
Sure, but there are moments whenever perhaps you could strike because there's a weak moment from the person you're negotiating with. And do I think Mulligetta is going to do that? No. But maybe a team would do that in a trade. But whatever. That's not really what we're talking about. But if you eliminate the window of being open of when you can negotiate, perhaps you miss your opportunity on what could be a sweetheart deal. To me, you should always be willing to negotiate.
That's fair. I just I get the impression from David Mulligetta that, like, to your point and Brian's point, is that if Stroud was bad for four straight weeks, he would not accept like a down deal in the moment. He'd be like, no, CJ's going to bounce back. And
why not? What if he got spooked? What if he got scared? What if CJ Stroud told Mulligetta, again, these agents worked for the players, that, hey, let's just go ahead and do that contract that we had on the table on September 1st.
No, that's true. Like, yeah.
Let's just say it's a $55 million deal. Cause we all think that would be probably team friendly for the Texans, right? 55 would be team friendly for the Texans.
But as the cap goes up and everything, it'll look friendly.
So let's say the Houston Texans have an offer right now, $220 million, 4 years for C.J. Stroud. If you want to do it, you can sign it. We're leaving it on the table. And C.J. Stroud's a little sluggish out of the gate. Stroud gets scared. He's like, hey, guarantee me my money. Would you still do it? If the Texans are like, no, we're not doing it anymore because we're not negotiating in season, well, you just missed a golden opportunity.
You just missed
a team-friendly deal.
Do you think that any of this potential discussion here, part of the hiccup and the challenge is what Nick Caserio is known for, which is these shorter contracts?
No, I think they would be open to a shorter contract. You get paid again.
Yeah. Because CJ, if CJ only had to play, this year and then probably he'd play on his fifth year option or like they would be included in the deal, the 3 years would pick up after that.
Yeah, if you signed him to a 3 year extension now, it would be this year, fourth year, fifth year option, and then three additional years.
Yeah.
That's why the people looked at the Will Anderson contract. Like only three, what was this? 3 years? Like only 3 years? Well, you got the fourth year, you got the fifth year next year, then the 3 years.
Yeah. I feel like the quarterbacks haven't been signing that. So it feels like it's a little different than the market we've seen. I mean, obviously now Mahomes is an extreme outlier here, right? His was a 10-year contract for $500 million. But I think Herbert's contract was longer than that.
Yeah,
I think Burrow's was too. But, I mean, I just was thinking like that could be a little bit of an impasse between, Texans do things this way. CJ probably still, yes, it'd be nice to get paid again. But having that longer-term security, that 4 or 5-year contract after your fifth-year extension would be a lot nicer for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll see. Like, I'm definitely now based off of, because I'm with you, like, I think Jonathan Alexander is a very good reporter. I'm at, 45% it gets done.
Yeah, I'm at, 30.
I'm going to go a little higher.
I'm at 30% because I believe the divide's too far. Where are you at, Brian? Brian's probably at 5%. Brian hated what Nick is
saying. I'll go with the Dan Harrington 10%.
I hope that you do not sign a contract to extend CJ, trade him for Lamar Jackson. Somebody said Carson Wentz for some reason. Oh, a quarterback that was traded. 55 is the furthest I'd go if I were Caserio. I think CJ is clearly in the Jalen Hurts territory of quarterback, and getting paid any more than him would be poor business on the Texan side. Yeah, but when Jalen Hurts signed, it was a bigger percentage of the salary cap than when CJ is going to sign. So if CJ signs for 55, when Jalen Hurts signed for 55, Jalen got a way bigger percentage of the cap than Stroud would currently get. And agents operate off the cap percentage, not the dollar. Like D'Amico said, if you earn it on the field, you'll get paid. I believe that's the way Nick works. Yeah, I believe that too. Nick is pretty eager to sign guys, though, especially his guys.
Fast.
When someone says that doesn't offend me, it offends them. Why would the Texans pay CJ now, give him the season to prove himself? The reason that they would pay him now is to sign a contract before the quarterback contracts go nuts. Because right now, Dak makes 60, Mahomes is at 64, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, maybe Bo Nix, maybe CJ Stroud, are going to be quarterbacks to completely reset the market. There's going to be $70 million quarterbacks next year. So if the Texans could get CJ Stroud at $60 million before he has a good season, because a good general manager predicts what's about to happen, not what happened, not back of the baseball card, if they believe CJ Stroud is a top-tier quarterback, they should pay him now at $60 million-ish per year, as opposed to waiting a year and then paying him $70 million. Mm-hmm. Because now you have him at a bargain. The danger in that, and I wouldn't extend him, I would risk the danger in signing him for a big contract, even at $60 million, which is team friendly ish, is if he's bad and then you're stuck like, you know, Tua, like the Dolphins were with
Don't
Tua.
Want that.
Yeah.
By the way, we were right. You were right.
What?
About Burrows.
He's hurt.
Mike Burrows' shoulder started, quote, barking yesterday from Joe Spada.
Yeah.
While he was playing catch, Burrows underwent imaging and there's inflammation.
Yeah.
So that's why he's not starting tonight.
It's the only logical reason.
Yeah, only logical reason.
Adrian, what was your number you're saying CJ Stroud and his camp are asking for? I think now it's somewhere around 65. I guess it's not 70 million because Alexander's like, no way it's that. So I'm going to go 65 to 69 million. I think it's right under. After last year's debacle, are we even sure he's worth 55? That's a fair question. Great work, guys. Appreciate y'all. Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's get to some more of what CJ Stroud, or not CJ Stroud, what Nick Caserio had to say. He had an update on Tank, talked about the offensive line. Lots to get to. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe. Yeah. Or text. I don't know why it's only call, Carly. Mix it up a little bit. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5. Hey, sports bettors. It's Branham here, as you know. And I'm here to tell you about my favorite sports book and casino. We got our sweat of the day today, although they're not teeing it off until like 6:30 because it's delayed up there in New York. We're betting a little bit of U.S. Open. But maybe U.S. Open's for you. Maybe some baseball. But football is back, baby. So it's time to get in on all the action with BetUS.com, my favorite sports book and casino. In fact, it's the only sports book and casino that I endorse. It's BetUS. Say. If you want a game plan to win this season, listen up. Play with BetUS. They went large for you this season with a huge offer, a 200% welcome up to $1,000 on your first three deposits. How big is that? That's right. A 200% welcome bonus. All you have to do is go to BetUS, click on the promotions link, and it's right there for you. You don't even need a code. Just go to the website, get that promo link, and it's right there for you. BetUS offers value other sportsbooks simply do not. They have all the products you need, like competitive odds. I like that. Same game parlays, even better. Live betting. I like live betting. Odds boost. Thank you very much. Prop betting, too. It's very fun. Do you want to get paid fast? Of course you do. BetUS accepts crypto. And when you bet, you build points and get rewarded for that, too. Want to play in the casino? Of course you do. Enjoy a 200% casino welcome bonus up to $4,000. They're treating you well this football season. Football is back. The biggest bonuses are back. Get started today at BetUS.com. BetUS.com. BetUS, serving bets since 94.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Houston Restaurant Weeks is back. Just a few more days. About a week left. Runs through September 7th. Citywide All-Star lineup. Hundreds of restaurants. Prefix menus. And every time you eat, you're helping out the Houston Food Bank. Dine out. Do good. Check out the full lineup at HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com. Finish strong. Finish strong. Try some new spots you haven't tried. It is delicious. Jennifer Streeter is going to join us at the top of the hour. Breakdown on the latest to potentially NHL to Houston. Well, also tomorrow, we're going to begin our AFC South preview. We're going to have a guest on every day for the rest of the week previewing AFC South. Jacksonville tomorrow, Colts Thursday,
Duval.
Titans Friday. Which I really wanted to get Seth to flow, but he protects his email address like Fort Knox. Did you see the Titans today? They decredentialed somebody?
Yes.
Is that a word? I don't know if that's a word, but they took somebody's credential away.
Yeah, I did.
That's kind of...
Because the guy's independent now?
Yeah. I don't know what his past was. I know he's like a YouTuber. I think he made them mad, so they ripped away his credential.
Yeah, when you don't have like a legit outlet backing you, it's very easy for that to happen. Mm-hmm. They can take it away real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, usually you're grandfathered in, but if you tick them off, well, you don't have anybody. You're just an independent YouTuber. I'm going to take your credential away.
Yeah, I read his question last week that like has got the...
What was his question?
How would you evaluate your performance?
We should get him on.
Like...
That's all he said?
If that's really what the question was.
Yeah, he's probably been building up.
Yeah.
And that was probably the straw that broke
apparently,
the Amy Adams back.
It led to... Because this was the guy...
The Cam Ward guy?
The Cam Ward guy.
Oh, okay.
Like Cam Ward went back. I'm like, how would you evaluate it?
Oh.
And I think he gave a pretty negative response.
Oh, really?
To Cam Ward.
He said I would have... paraphrasing, but he said I would evaluate it as a poor performance. Yeah. And then Cam handled it, I think, professionally after that. But...
Huh.
If he's an independent guy, I could see that getting his credential.
So here's the danger, though, is if you're going to allow independent people to be credentialed, and then all of a sudden you're going to pull credentials once they get negative, that's you trying to control the spin of who is covering.
Sure.
That
happens here. I mean, just to be honest,
that's to me is dangerous.
They let
isn't Jonathan Alexander fighting about this? That's anti-journalism if I've ever seen it.
The reason why that certain people can't get it is usually because of people like Jonathan Alexander. Just to be totally transparent, like it's the reporters who are on the beats of these teams that are keeping people out. They're being asked about like, does this person belong? And they say no. So it's kind of happening. So that could very easily be happening there.
I think
insiders club.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think. But to me, you need to decide, okay, independent content creators are either allowed or they're not. 100%. And you need certain thresholds. The threshold, even if it's a follower account, like, hey, we want to be in front of a lot of people. So, yes, you can be a content creator or an independent outlet, but you need 500,000 subs.
Yeah, you got to be legitimized. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if I would call it legitimate. It just means you have a lot of followers.
Yeah. Yeah,
you have a lot of subs or whatever you call it. Pound the subscribe button. Yeah. But the problem is you can't be judging it based on, well, they treat us nicely or they treat us poorly.
No.
They have positive stuff on us. They have negative stuff on us. Because if that is what is the line of demarcation, you are now controlling the narrative. And that to me is very dangerous. To me, it should be more binary. Okay, we're going to allow these people, but these are the parameters for them to be allowed. One of those parameters should not be, are they talking about us good or bad?
Yeah.
That, to me, is where it gets slippery, dangerous, all of that.
No, totally. And even if it's like an awkward back and forth like it was with Cam Ward, does it warrant that?
I mean, the Texans credential people, that should they be credentialed?
Fair. That's a fair question.
I mean, I think you could go down the list like, okay. Houston Chronicle beat writer, absolutely should. ESPN beat writer, absolutely should.
I mean,
independent people on YouTube with 200 followers, probably not.
I mean, they, look,
but why are they?
But they made us jump through hoops, to be straight up. Like, they have. Like, when we brought in Kunkel, like, there was hoops to go through.
But, like, why?
Because
I don't want to throw out names, but, like, why? Well, you threw out Kunkel,
yeah,
because Kunkel's
fine. He's with us. Yeah.
But, like, why would Kunkel be not allowed, but... Reporter ABC, not even reporter, independent reporter ABC are allowed.
Great question.
What's the difference? Is it followers? Probably not, because Kunkel has more followers than some of the people I'm alluding to.
Yeah.
Is it because the people on the right are talking well and then Kunkel's not? That's where it gets dangerous and should not be accepted.
No, 100%. Because, and also, like, I don't, Because I think that if teams do view it that way, and I don't know if that's why the hoops here are jumped through the way there. I actually don't really think that. I think it's just they don't view certain platforms and independent people as credible and worthy of it, to be honest. But, like, the negative reporting is valuable to it. Like, it is important.
Well,
like,
I think it's not honest.
Not everything can be sunshine and rainbows all the time.
That's what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
It's like, if one of your parameters of which independent media you're going to allow is if they're being nice to us.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable to me.
These down questions.
And I don't know enough about the Titan backstory, so I don't want to sound like I'm defending him. I don't know anything about the guy. But mine's more big picture. If you're going to allow independence, that's fine.
Yeah, this
you
guy
just
could
need
be
parameters, and the parameter can't be, well, they say nice things about us.
Yeah, this guy could be a jerk, and it's just like the final thing that happened of like a list of 100 that we just don't know about.
Yeah, it's just kind of always interesting to me. Like,
it
who you cred, who you don't. And then those parameters are just kind of like, I don't know, vibes. Is that journalism? Anyways, I digress. I'll get off my soapbox here. More Caserio. Caserio with an update on one Tank Dell. Go Cougs. I wore his jersey yesterday thanks to Wheatstraw.
Definitely making progress. You know, even when we started training camp, we didn't include him on kind of the reserve list. You know, he was in a different category than some other players. So I think every player would kind of look at their situation and say, what do we need to do to kind of get as good evaluation as possible and to make a determination about, you know, where they are. So I would say he's close. He's not quite there, which is why he's in the category that he's in. I think we'll have a better idea here when a lot of these guys after 4 weeks or 4 games, whatever it is. But I'd say he's definitely closer now than he was, let's say, in training camp. So there's a little bit more work that remains. But overall, he's in pretty good spirits. There's certain things that we just have to see. And some of this, too, is honestly for him mentally, just to make sure that he has enough confidence so he can go out there and perform the way that he's capable of and the way that kind of he knows how to.
Interesting, because hearing it feels like some of that's going to be challenging to get, isn't it, after the start of the season? Like, they don't practice as hard.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to simulate game reps.
Yeah,
for
so
sure.
I'm just curious how they go through that process over the next 4 weeks.
I thought it was interesting what he said about like the mental side of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a huge trust thing here, I would imagine, like trusting your own body after that bad of an injury and what you feel comfortable with, just making the cuts, even all those different things. Like, and yeah, it looks fine against air. That's totally different when there's a person in front of you.
Yeah.
And you might get tackled.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you're just going to have to pull the trigger. I believe that Tank would have done it week one if they would have allowed it. I do think it's the Houston Texans kind of managing the roster a bit, too. Like, hey, we don't think we're going to get 17 games out of Tank. What's the best 10 games to get out of him?
Yeah.
Is it better to buy him an extra 6 weeks to get him on the football field? Or should we let him just go now? He gets hurt, has to come back. So I think it's a way of kind of like just positioning his availability.
100%.
And then also, like, when are you at your healthiest as a football team? You're at your healthiest in week one.
Yeah, so you're okay, right?
You're not healthier in week 12. So if you know you're going to get 10 games out of Tank, is it better to have him on this football team in week one whenever you're at or closest to the healthiest you'll be all year, or is it better to stagger it until week 6, 7, 8? Glad I threw 8 in there. I actually applaud it. I think it's a smart decision. Would we love to see him out there week one, full go? Yes. That's not realistic. This dude had an unbelievably tragic, terrible, tragic's too big a word, but I mean, maybe tragic. CJ Stroud thought it was tragic. He was kneeling down crying. But a catastrophic knee injury. So
yeah,
I have no issue with this.
No, this is, we talked about this before it happened a couple weeks ago. Like, this is a perfectly fine way to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
Take your time. What's the rush? Like, if it looks good. And honestly, the play on the field of the other guys should not determine when he's ready to come back.
I disagree a little. Like, if you're rolling and your receivers look great, I think you buy more time.
I guess I was doing it from a more negative lens of, like, if they're not playing well.
Oh, I see.
Like, you don't need to rush him back out there if he's not fully ready week 5.
Yeah.
It's just when he's 100%, he goes on the field.
Maybe I'll just be a homer.
How much he plays, I think, is determined based on the success in the field. But him getting activated off the IR should have nothing to do with the performance that's on the field. It should just be only how much he plays when he is activated.
Yeah. Here was some snark from Nick Caserio, because his 53-man roster looks kind of funny. You got a lot of offensive linemen. You have very few skill position guys, a quarterback, running back, receiver. You have five tight ends now. So a little bit of snark from Caserio whenever he was asked why so few skill guys on the 53.
Well, I mean, we kept X on the roster, and then some of our depth at those positions is off the roster. So we have five running backs in the building. So Jawar's in the building, Noah Whittington's in the building on the practice squad. So, like, we have five running backs in the building. Like, we don't distinguish or delineate. Well, we got three on the roster. We have five running backs in the building, and we got nine receivers, counting Tinsley. So all those players are eligible to play. So whoever we feel like we got to take to the game each week, like, we'll take to the game. Like, that's how we felt like we wanted to construct a roster. Again, I've said this 1,000 times. Some of our depth is on the roster. Some of our depth's off the roster. So it doesn't really, the numbers are the numbers. So some positions are going to have, certain years are going to have more than others. It's just, that's how we feel like we have to construct it at that point in time. So there could be changes. There can be players that come on. There can be players that come off. So again, those two positions, we got five running backs in the building, and we got nine receivers. So we treat them all the same.
There you go. He doesn't really distinguish
the numbers on the numbers.
The 53 and the 69 man roster. Because you can have 16 on the practice squad, 53 plus 16, 69. You can actually have 17 if one's an international guy, but the Texans don't currently have an international guy. Marlon Klein does not qualify.
They also don't have a quarterback.
On the practice squad, yeah. He was asked about that. He's like, at some point we'll probably have a quarterback, but not currently. But, I mean, it is weird. They have five tight ends on the roster. Now, Caserio did concede that they're not taking five to game day.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird. It's just a little weird. Does it matter? No. I take that back. It does matter a little bit, because I understand what he's saying. Like, hey, you're looking at the 53 when you shouldn't be looking at the 53. You should be looking at the 69, because we can call up the practice squad guys and they can play up to three times. The one thing he's not bringing up at all that I don't think should be completely ignored is that those practice squad guys can be scooped up by any team in the NFL like that. So, like, those guys are different. The 16 practice squad guys are different than the 53. The Dallas Cowboys could have a wild hair right now and be like, yeah, we don't like Amari DiMarcado. Let's go get Jawar Jordan, yeah. And they could pick him up like that. So Caserio, to me, intentionally is ignoring that aspect of it. I agree with his point big picture-wise and most of it, but he's totally ignoring the fact. And he's not ignoring it, in the offices, but to the media, he's just not talking about it at all. He wasn't asked about it, and it's not his job to bring it up. But I do think there's a major difference between the 53 and then the 16 practice squad guys.
Agreed.
Yeah, it can't be planned depth if you have no control about if they're on the roster.
Right. Right. And maybe they just don't care that much about Jawar and Noah.
Clearly.
Maybe if they, somebody signed him, oh, well, we'll go find somebody else. We don't think that they have, like, tremendous value over NFL free agent on the street, running back, blah, 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 blah. Which, okay, like, I'm not in love with Jawar. Brian loves the guy. I'm not in love with Jawar, I'm not in love with Noah Whittington.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever. Like, I'm not dying on that towel's hill. I just think Nick's being a little bit disingenuous by saying the 16 guys on the practice squad are identical to the 53 on the 53-man roster.
Yes.
53-man roster guys can't be signed by any other team like that. Just saying. It's not that big a deal, but just saying. Braden Smith and Sam Hagen are headed to the IR.
Okay.
They brought back Dom Robinson. They brought back Brevin Jordan after they were initially cut or waived. They brought them back. No surprise with Smith. I guess that was going to happen.
Boom. There we go. Jeremy Branham's right.
We knew he was hurt. There's no surprise there. I guess Sam Hagen to the IR is a little bit of a surprise. We thought it would just be like a designate to the practice squad.
Yeah.
But whatever. So those guys are going to the IR. Nick had a lot of good things to say about Keelan Rutledge.
Yes,
Cash
did.
Or Trash. We're going to do Cash or Trash here in a minute after we talk to Jennifer Streeter. Cash or Track Nick Caserio saying this about Keelan Rutledge.
But in the end, we feel like
in the end,
Keelan's right now, the best left guard. I mean, honestly, he's probably one of our best. He's probably the best offensive lineman that we have.
Mm. Mm.
Okay, I'm going to cash it.
Cash or trash. Best offensive lineman the Houston Texans have.
Is it a good thing where I'm cashing it? That, like, yes, he's a first-round pick, and that means you already hit on your pick in theory.
It's probably good. There's good. There's pros and cons. Yeah. Good old pros and cons list.
It's like that's good. Like, you drafted a guy. He seems like a hit. But is he the best guy because the bar is so low?
Yes. Yes.
That's not good.
Both. The answer is yes to both things.
So I'm excited to hear that, but also not.
Yeah, I'm cashing it. But it maybe it is a testament to where your offensive line is. But maybe it's a testament to future left guard all pro for 10 straight years. You know?
It's true.
You know? Here's another one with Casario. More praise to Keelan Rutledge. Nick!
Nico shows highlights and, you know, will practice every day. And he shows up on the tape finishing plays clean, not being dirty, but going right to the line, which is what you want to see. Like him and Crosby kind of, you know, got into it a little bit, and then they cut it off, all right? I mean, he wasn't backing down from Max, and Max is one of the best players in the league, and, you know, Max is a badass, I would say. So, I mean, Keelan's not afraid. So, like, he's got bite, he's got physicality, he's got toughness, you know, which is why we drafted him, and you saw that on his tape, and, you know, hopefully we can carry that, you know, through to the season, which, you know, I think everybody's pretty confident that he will.
There you go. There you go.
Not dirty.
It was very quick. Because he's not dirty. Definitive.
Because he realized as soon as he started saying, he's like, uh-oh, this might get taken out of context here a little
bit. He's very quick. Not dirty. He doesn't want to. Who was the Runyon guy that sent the letter to Aziz? Like, you're a terrible human being. Remember when he did that?
Oh,
Who was the player? It was a former player.
Like, yeah,
former
played officer. For the Eagles.
Yeah. Was it Runyon?
I think that last name's right.
Remember John? He wrote the letter to Aziz?
John Runyon. Yeah.
He's like, you're not holding yourself up to a reasonable standard. I don't remember the exact words, but he read him the Riot Act.
Yeah.
And Aziz is like the off the field. It's like the nicest dude ever.
Your lack of respect for the game of football.
That's what it
troubling.
Was. Yeah. Your lack of respect for the game of football. He absolutely crushed him.
Meanwhile,
on that letter.
Go search John Runyon highlights.
Yeah, dirty.
Yeah. And then remember, Nick Casario ripped him.
Yeah, he did.
I love that from Nick. Just rip John Runyon.
Stand up for your guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, you say, what do you say? Your lack of respect for the game of football?
It's troubling. Yeah.
How do you get off on writing something like that? Just suspend the guy. Like, what's the point of that letter?
Yeah, the full quote is this. Your lack of sportsmanship and respect for the game of football and all those who play, coach, and enjoy watching it is troubling and does not reflect the core values of the NFL.
Why write that?
That's brutal, man.
Like, what's the purpose?
I hope that was written for him.
What's the purpose of that?
I don't know.
Why don't you just suspend the guy and move on with it and not write a letter at all?
Yeah.
Like, these guys who are just put in position and like, oh, I gotta stay busy. Let me write this letter saying how Aziz, how disappointed I am in you.
Is that probably so because dumb. A concussion was involved?
I don't know.
Like, everything around concussions are just...
You know what I mean? But why do you have to write the letter?
I think they just want to show they're taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Whether they should or shouldn't, you know, whatever. But I think they're trying to show that they're taking it seriously.
We're going to suspend you 6 games because there was a concussion and we're taking that seriously.
Agreed.
You're calling his character into play?
I'm hearing you, but I think that,
it's like
that
3
might
years
be part
ago,
of it.
I'm getting fired up about it again. I don't know why we even talked about Aziz. Oh, because of like dirty and clean.
What's up, Trevor?
And then, because this is not worth the soundbite, but Nick Casario did say that they kept Jake Andrews, I believe, and it sounded very much like it because they wanted a backup center.
Yeah, I think Rutledge is your left guard.
Because he was asked about like Patterson.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, different players. I would say Andrews is better at center. Patterson's probably better overall. But I think they wanted a backup center, which I applaud. I agree with. To me, Keelan Rutledge should not be your backup center. Keelan Rutledge should be your anchor left guard for the next 10 to 12 years. And you easy bake oven. You set it and you forget it. Keelan Rutledge, you're there. And we're going to work around you.
Would you be okay if they moved him to center next year, though?
No.
So you just want him at left guard?
Yeah, this is
permanently.
Done. It's done.
Okay.
It's done.
Because I'm okay if like another offseason of development, if they feel like he is better at center.
No.
Long term, I'm okay with that.
Why would he be better at center?
Well, I don't know. Just like if you feel like he can handle the pass protections and everything that he would be responsible for. I know CJ does a lot of that now, but.
But if you move to center, you have to bring in a left guard. Why not just keep him left guard and bring in a center?
Yeah, the only way would be okay with it, and it's kind of hitting what you're saying there, is like if next year you find another Keelan Rutledge type, but he can't play center, and he can play left guard.
Right, you talked me into it.
Yeah. But that would be the only reason.
You talked me into it a little bit. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Jose Jorge is going to join us at 5:15. Will Jeremy know? We'll do that at 5 o'clock hour as well. But Jennifer Streeter's got a new article out. Met with the mayor yesterday. She does hockey on SI. Has been reporting all over the NHL to Houston. Jennifer Streeter, when we come back on the latest with hockey to Houston. Jennifer Streeter next. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5.
The biggest trap in today's car market isn't the price. It's the 84-month financing. Today, nearly 25% of new car buyers finance for 84 months or longer just to make the payment affordable. At D&M Leasing, they know there's a smarter solution. With the best-in-class, easy lease, you can lease the vehicle that fits your lifestyle with a payment that's much lower. You can drive a newer vehicle with the latest technology and safety features for your family while reducing the risk of negative equity. Don't finance longer. You'll be buried down the road. Save today by making a smarter choice. Call D&M Leasing today at 713-290-1000 or visit them online at dmautoleasing.com. That's 713-290-1000 or online at dmautoleasing.com. And tell them Joe George from ESPN 97.5 sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.